Hello, Texans. Welcome to the show. What a big week for your Texans as we continue to talk about the most recent acquisition and a bunch of other things related to the Texans and the NFL. Mark Vandermeer and John Harris with you. And it's Thursday, and it's time for the general, John McClain. John, how's it going? Let's get your reaction to Stephon Diggs. Diggs in the building today. What are you thinking?
I've done 12 shows beyond my regular shows and podcast on Thursday, all about Stephon Diggs and the trade that rocked the NFL, even though it'd been rumored for a couple of days. And I've read and talked to people in Buffalo. You know, they were happy to get the deal. They took a 2-25, threw in a 5-6, which seems heavily tilted toward the Texans. And the fact that they have now Stephon Diggs, who I believe they'll get the very best out of him on the field, off the field, because he didn't become an issue in Minnesota, Buffalo till near the end. And I think he'll be a great addition. Nico Collins, Tank Dell, Dalton Schultz, Joe Mixon. I love what Nick Caserio's doing. Build to win while your quarterback is on his rookie contract.
General, there's so much talk nationally about this particular move. And obviously the kudos and the plaudits coming the way of the Houston Texans. I don't want to say, does that worry you in some sense? I mean, you've seen everything that the city has gone through in a football sense, but to know where we were in 2020, to even know where we were in 2022, at the beginning of 2023 and where the Texans are now, is it almost like overwhelming in some sense to kind of think about it from that perspective that, oh my gosh, could this move put them over the top in combination with all the other moves they've made?
First of all, this time last year, didn't have a quarterback, didn't have a pass rusher. Nobody had a clue what kind of coach DeMeco would be in his first season. And who knew about Nico Collins? He'd been hurt every year he'd been in the league. And then they had a great draft, good free agent period. One of the things I'm amazed, a lot of people now are putting the Texans up there as a contender for the Super Bowl. Now, my opinion is, I've said all along, I think it'll be 2025 because the schedule is brutal. The quarterbacks are brutal. And I think for a team that's never gotten home field advantage, it's never been beyond the second round, I want them to get beyond that before I pick them. But I think they're a contender. I think they should win the AFC South again. Love to see them get home field advantage. But I noticed the odds in Vegas. I saw betonline.ag 22-1, now 10-1. DraftKings went from plus 2,500 to 1,700. BetMGM 25-1 to 15-1. A lot of teams are saying this is the team that can beat Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid and the Kansas City Chiefs. They are exciting. I can't wait for the draft. I think what this means, of course, is they're not going to be taking a receiver high in the draft. And they can focus on defense, particularly the interior line and corner. And they still need another safety. I think Caserio and Ryans have done an outstanding job, and they're getting universal praise that they deserve.
It's just amazing. We have a lot of areas to go to with this development. But I want to start here because there is a lot of talking about the Texans as a Super Bowl contender. Great. We all know it's all about week one right now. I hate to be that guy, the one game at a time person, but that's what it is, General. I mean, you know it. People are acting like, oh, you're in the playoffs already, and the first game you play is going to be a playoff game. No, it's not. You've got to build this thing throughout the course of the season and develop the proper chemistry. But they do have what appears to be, well, there's no question, this is the best bunch of skilled players as a group they've ever had. Am I right? There's no way that you can top it when you look at the collective ammunition that they have at the skill position.
Not as a group. They don't have an Andre Johnson or an Arian Foster, the best Hall of Fame receiver and the best running back in franchise history. But yes, they got a group. And as we saw last year, they need depth. They were able to overcome 11 starting offensive linemen. And that's something none of us are talking about that I know of. It's like the offensive line is fine, and maybe it is if everybody's healthy. And that's another thing that makes what C.J. Stroud accomplished as a rookie even more impressive. 11 different starting offensive line, including some starters who were lucky to be on the team, much less in backup roles. And one thing I've been thinking about this deal with Stephon Diggs, I'll guarantee you D'Amico Ryans or Nick Caserio or both of them did not talk to Case Keenum, because biggest play of his career and the biggest play of Stephon Diggs' career came in the Minneapolis Miracle after the 17 playoffs to beat the Saints. So Case saw him behind the scenes all season. They made some beautiful music together. And Case, of course, was the kind of the unheralded hero of C.J. Stroud's development as a rookie, because he did a great job behind the scenes, which Stroud told people. And I think that Case would be a positive influence on Stephon Diggs, in case Diggs is not happy at some point with how much he's getting the ball in Buffalo. He was never afraid to express that on social media. And I think between D'Amico and Case and Stroud and some of their other veteran leaders, I think that'll be great for Diggs, and he will play his butt off.
All right, John, I don't think it completely eliminates the need for wide receiver in the draft, especially you don't want to skew a draft that's got this many good wide receivers with 9 picks I think you have throughout the draft, but it maybe changes the priority of where you look at wide receivers. So let's talk about 42 and 59. I don't think they'll pick at 42, 59, but their first couple of picks in this draft, how does the priority change in your mind, if at all, what they should do with those 2 picks?
I saw the Texans announce their draft party, and first thing I thought about was, well, what if Caserio trades those 2 twos and moves back into the first round? And which you can't rule out anything with Nick Caserio. And we know one thing, he's not going to sit on his hands. Like you said, it's doubtful they're going to pick in both those spots. I think it'll be a defensive tackle and a corner, or a corner and a defensive tackle. I think the 3rd-round pick will also be maybe a safety, and I think maybe one of those 2 fours, you might take a wide receiver. I tell you something interesting, and we're all the same. We try to read mock drafts, and I'm seeing a lot of people have the Texans taking a linebacker in the 2nd round, and I think they don't realize they signed Azeez Al-Shaair, who D'Amico loves and will be on the field. Christian Harris will be on the field. The 3rd linebacker might not be on the field, but 30% of the time. So why would you use a 2nd-round pick on one? Because he didn't give Al-Shaair a 3-year contract to spend a lot of time on the bench. So I think it'll be the secondary, and they've got to have another safety. You know, you can't have a season like last year when Jalen Petrie was the only one who was healthy, and you had 3 more behind him who were signed off the street. And so I think, considering Jimmy Ward's age and injury history, that you got to get another young safety like Petrie, who I think will be no later than the 4th round.
The general mentioned the draft party. It's a Friday night draft party, 2nd and 3rd round, April 26th, Avenida Houston in downtown Houston. That's right in front of the George R. Brown, right there at Discovery Green. It's going to be awesome. Begins at 6. We'll be on the air from there. Texans legends there. Chance to buy the new merch. Going to be fun. Draft party presented by Modelo, Friday, April 26th. There's the plug. Now, General and John Harris, where does this stack up, this group, when I'm talking about 3 receivers, Nico Tank Dell and Stephon Diggs, tight end Dalton Schultz, running back Joe Mixon? That's your pass-catching group right there. I know it's deeper than that, but those are the frontline players as of now. Where does that stack up with some of the best in the league? The only team I could see is by far the number one team in the league, and based on the fact that they've done it before, because the Texans haven't done anything yet with this particular group, some pieces of it, yes, is San Francisco. But after that, it gets really interesting on paper. They stack up very well against everybody in the league. Miami, some of the other teams you might be thinking of as well. Detroit, perhaps?
Maybe Detroit. Detroit with Amon-Ra St. Brown plus
Gibbs.
Gibbs, Montgomery, Laporta.
Suspended. Yeah. Williams. They have talent and they have speed. They've got a really good tight end. I think that's a good one. They'd be right there with the Texans, and health has a lot to do with it. You got Noah Brown. They re-signed him. He had those 2 great games. Robert Woods is still here. maybe all those guys won't be here when they get to the 53-man roster. But if you look at it from a defensive coordinator's standpoint and what you have to do,
yeah,
and you double Nico, no, you got Diggs. Brian Baldinger, the NFL Network former longtime guard, he loves to use video, and he had one I tweeted a couple times today about Diggs and his route running. He said he is a third down monster, and he gave a bunch of examples of Diggs and his route running on third down, how smart he is. Blitz, he goes right to the spot he's supposed to. Nobody's ever complained about Stephon Diggs, his playing. You know, he dropped a pass last year, so what? All guys drop passes. And he is really smart, and I think he's going to love being here. And if all those guys produce anywhere close to what they did last year, if Tank could stay healthy all season, but they want to run the ball a lot, Joe Mixon can catch too, but that's a lot of options. And you talk about nightmares, that offense is going to be a defensive coordinator's nightmare.
The Rams are underrated, but I don't think they have a third receiver. Mm. The Ravens with Zay Flowers, Mark Andrews, Derrick Henry's pretty good, but they don't have a trio of receivers.
Yeah.
They don't have
that.
That's
what I'm talking about.
Yeah, the Chiefs, I think Pacheco's underrated, so you've got Kelce Pacheco. You know, Rashee Rice was good last year, and they just added Hollywood Brown,
but they don't have three.
Unless you count Kadarius Toney, so there's that. Well, I'm kidding. Yeah. I'm kidding.
Rashee Rice might not be playing for a while because he's a moron, which we saw in his driving on Central Expressway. And Hollywood Brown, he's with his third team. I don't think they compare. The difference, of course, is the guy who's throwing the ball, Patrick Mahomes. He makes them all look good. But I think the Texans right now, if I thought about it, would go be number three in the league behind San Francisco and Detroit, number one in the AFC. Miami's got two great home run hitters who are proven, but they don't have four.
Yeah, they don't have a tight end either. That's the they used to have Gesicki. I can't remember who they have now at tight end, but they don't have
Johnny
tight,
Smith.
But they went and got Jonnu Smith. So, but even he's kind of lost a little bit. Oh, I'll give you one.
Okay.
Philly?
Falcons.
Falcons.
Bijan, Drake London, Kyle Pitts. Mm-hmm. But they don't have the depth of
Pitts
receiver, though.
Pitts has been a disappointment from where he was picked. Now, I don't put them in the Texans class.
No, I'm not putting them in there because they don't have, you know. But I think when you're talking about what they have at a high-end offensive level, yeah, I mean, they added Darnell Mooney too. Now, pales comparison. When you're talking about three stud receivers, stud tight end, stud running back, you just don't find this completeness across the league. That's what's unbelievable.
And the general talked about, well, Arian and Andre Johnson, obviously, with Owen Daniels, that was a heck of a trio right there.
Yeah.
But after Walter was pretty good for a while. Too.
Walter was good, but is he
the third receiver
good?
Then?
Jacoby for a while.
Yeah.
I mean, are they this good? Are they this level of good? I don't know. And then you look at who's pulling the trigger. And this is going to relate to my next question, because I was asked this by a couple of different people. Is this the most excitement for the Houston Texans this time of year ever? And look, we could talk about year one. I think that's its own category.
That's its own category because you're going into the first season of being back. Mm-hmm. That's kind of a different, it's almost a different question in some sense.
Well, 2012, coming off your first division title, first playoff victory, J.J. Watt phenomenon, Andre, Arian.
Shaw back healthy.
There was a lot of anticipation going into the 2012 season, probably coming out of the 2012 season, even though they were disappointed, blew the home field advantage. I think there was a lot that year, too. The problem during O'Brien is so many people didn't like Bill. Fans could never totally get behind him like D'Amico. I would say one of the years with Kubiak would be close to this one right now because, number one, Kubiak was so liked and respected, and they had so much talent, but this and D'Amico liked and respected, and they have so much talent.
Yeah,
remember how we felt in 2019 when we had Hop, Fuller, and QT? Remember that?
We felt pretty good.
We felt pretty darn good.
That was a good group.
Yeah,
now,
we thought that was going to be a great group.
Yeah, but QT had not really proven it yet the way Dell has.
No, absolutely.
And 2018, there was a ton of excitement because Watson was coming back healthy. Mm-hmm. Yep. So, okay, let's go. Let's do something with Deshaun Watson because we saw those five and a half, six games or whatever the year before. But I think General's right. 12 was 12, huge. Yep. But here's the difference. People really like Gary Kubiak. People love D'Amico Ryans and the quarterback.
Yep.
You knew Matt Schaub was good and you were happy he was coming back healthy because, oh my gosh, what can the team do now? But there's this extra level of love for C.J. Stroud here. So I think that this could be number one, but it's, you know, it's impossible to measure. It's impossible
to
quantify.
It could be, of course.
Yeah.
General, I don't know if you're doing a mock draft, but Minnesota's at 11.
I thought I was doing one with you.
Yeah, we got to talk about that coming up soon.
Ooh.
Minnesota at 11. I think the Broncos are at 12 and the Raiders are at 13. The common thread amongst those three teams at 11, 12, 13 is they need a quarterback. Now, maybe the Raiders could say, well, you know, we got O'Connell and Minshew. We can survive, whatever. The Broncos have Jarrett Stidham. No. And the Vikings have Sam Darnold. No. Those three teams are sitting outside the top 10. They've got to get in probably in the top five or the top six to get a quarterback. Which of those three teams, Raiders, Broncos, Vikings, has to get into the top four or five to get one of the top four quarterbacks in the draft?
Assuming they have J.J. McCarthy his stock soaring because of what he's done in shorts and a T-shirt, Minnesota has the two ones, including the 23rd from the Texans. The Broncos don't have a two. And if they like McCarthy, it would be so interesting if one traded up to five with the Chargers. And then right before the pick, another one traded up to four with Arizona and took McCarthy. So you got to be very careful. It's almost like you got to go up with the Cardinals to be guaranteed of getting
one of those four,
if indeed that's who you want. But those teams, next year the draft's nothing like this one based on what we know right now. So I think Minnesota, when they made the deal with the Texans, it was with the idea that they would trade up. I love the fact that Jim Harbaugh has done more for J.J. McCarthy's stock than anybody, constantly talking about how great he is, constantly talking about his great combine and pro day, and all designed, not because he believes it, but to try to get the first four picks to be quarterbacks so he'll have his choice of trading down or taking any other player available in his first season. And a lot of people are buying into it. And I saw Rick Goslin from rickgoslin.com, who's one of the best NFL writers I've ever seen on the draft. He came up with a formula trying to judge quarterbacks. And he said there are exceptions, but his was you got to throw at least 1,300 passes in college. McCarthy threw, I think, 711. It was back to Bill Parcells saying he wouldn't take quarterback unless he'd been a three-year starter. Well, you got Bo Nix, who started a record 61 games. But anyway, wow. That was the formula. And there were exceptions like Kurt Warner, but that was pretty tried and true. So I can't wait to see who takes McCarthy and tries to say, oh, it has nothing to do with the way he looked in his underwear.
Wait, did you say
there's a chance that McCarthy will go before one of those three?
Did
not
you
Caleb.
Say that
there's
Bo,
gonna be
amazing?
Bo Nix has started 61 games in college.
61 well, games.
Yeah, you got the record. you had the COVID year, so you got an extra year for, so you played games in 2020. That basically just, and then he played 5 years.
Holy crap.
Mm-hmm.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
That is a ton of time.
That COVID year. Remember Austin Deculus sat in here? He played 61 games at LSU.
So how old is Bo Nix right now?
Oh, he's one of the older ones. He's like 24, I think. So that's one of the things that is working against Nix a little
Chris
bit.
Chris Winkie called and said he's old.
Coming into the league.
Yeah, he'll be. I think he'll be 24 when he comes into the league. So
how old was Winkie when he
came
in?
They want to play
29.
40. That's no big deal anymore.
Yeah, I mean, it's a question of can Bo Nix play at this high a level. At the Senior Bowl, he didn't show he could. But it's going to be interesting with those top four quarterbacks. I mean, Caleb going to Chicago. And then the decision with Washington. There are things you read, and Washington's like, oh, we like J.J. McCarthy. Oh, it's got to be Jaden Daniels. No. They like Drake May. I mean, Washington starts changing the draft, and then at three, I think the Patriots have got the decision to make. To your point, General, if you, the only way you're guaranteed one of these top four quarterbacks is if you get to three or four. But if you go to four, well, somebody could call the Patriots and offer them a sweet deal, and they're like, well, we'll just live with Jacoby Brissett for a year. and we'll go get a quarterback
next year,
later.
There's no quarterbacks, and they don't.
Well, no, they'll get a quarterback a little bit later. They'll go get what I had in my mock happen was the Patriots took they traded out of that spot for the Giants. The Giants wanted McCarthy, so the Giants moved up. They moved to six. They took a tackle, traded back into the first round, and got Michael Penix Jr.
General, pick your bust among the top quarterbacks. Who's the most likely to bust out? And look, if Caleb Williams is it, I get it. It's larger than the others because he's the projected number one pick. But what do you think overall?
No, I wouldn't pick Caleb Williams. Everybody says he's such a special prospect, and they're putting weapons around him, trying to do what Nick Caserio is doing with the Texans, taking advantage of them when they're young and on that rookie contract. I would say McCarthy because he has the least experience of throwing the football. Mm-hmm. And, John, you talked about the Senior Bowl. You know, you got every throw Bo Nix made for 61 starts. And he had last year, what, three interceptions, 40-something touchdowns, completed 73%. Yes, it was an offense favorable for a quarterback, but you'd think he'd have a few bad throws in there every once in a while. And so I would say the top guy's just McCarthy because he has the least, the smallest, what am I trying to say?
Body of work?
Yeah, that's exactly it.
Yep. Resume is not very long compared to the other
Isn't
guys.
Isn't it amazing that Williams and Daniels are transfers? And did Drake May play at North Carolina the whole time?
Yeah, Drake May played at Carolina the whole time. They're all transfers now. Everybody's transfers. Michael Penix, Bo Nix, Devin Leary, Spencer Rattler. I mean, at least 70% of the draft eligible quarterbacks are transfers. I mean, it's we're going that way because guys want an opportunity. They want to play in a particular offense. They go get experience somewhere and then head somewhere else, get a better NIL deal. Away you go. There are very few that are staying. That's why McCarthy stayed, Drake May stayed, et cetera. But, yeah, I tend to like McCarthy's. I mean, look, the guy runs very well, so you got that in his holster. But I think because he runs well and because Michigan ran the ball well and because Michigan dominated teams last year, McCarthy didn't have to do a whole lot. But I know when they played Alabama, he made clutch throws down a stretch. When they played here against Washington and Michigan's offense is starting to stagnate a little bit and Washington's getting back in the game, J.J. McCarthy made a couple of huge, massive throws. He can make every throw. But I just don't look at McCarthy and think, oh, yeah, I'll take him in front of the other three. I'm not taking him in front of the other three.
So which one you think has the best chance to bust?
I think it's Drake. I told Mark the one I would say is Drake May just because – he's got too many WTF thoughts on the field. Like, he's got FOMO on every throw.
What
like, man,
that
if
stand
I.
For?
What's. I can't say that on the radio. Drake May just makes just questionable decisions throwing the football. That said, I really like Drake May because he's Jordan Love. He's 6'4, 220. He's the same size as Jordan Love. He plays almost the exact same way. They're not 4'3 burners, but they're fast enough, can make every throw. And they both kind of the same way in college. They were both the same way in college. They made every throw they thought they could make. If that meant throwing it through three guys to get to the receiver, they did. So they got to rein that in. Green Bay found a way to do that over the years. And so now Green Bay's got something.
Last year, we're talking about all this involving the Texans. Isn't it nice?
It's so nice. So nice. So nice to have a quarterback. General, I know you're a big women's basketball fan because of the Baylor success in recent years. So what were your thoughts on what you saw Monday night and where it's all going from here?
I thought Caitlin Clark was fabulous, of course. I was pulling for LSU because of Kim Mulkey and everything she did at Baylor. I think South Carolina is going to win a championship. They're the best team overall with the best depth and a great coach. I was hoping Juju Watkins, the freshman from USC, would play Caitlin Clark because Clark's leaving for the WNBA, and Juju Watkins will take her place as the premier player in college basketball. And I think it's great. The game between LSU and Iowa outdrew the biggest audience in women's history, and it was a list of all the things like World Series, NBA, all these things they outdrew, including Thursday Night Football on Amazon in the NFL. So I can't wait to see what Iowa and UConn will draw, even though they don't come on until 9:30 at least East.
That's ridiculous.
Are they crazy?
They're starting that game at the earliest at 9:30
Eastern
time. Are
they nuts? They're crazy. Wait, 9:30 Eastern?
Mm-hmm.
9:30 Eastern, probably.
Because they got the game before at 7.
This is not thinking. Mm-hmm. You want kids to watch this game. You want young children watching this game.
They're getting a lot of criticism for it, too, for that very reason. People talking about, well, I want my kid to watch it, but my kid's not going to stay up till midnight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is the big mistake the NBA makes, Major League Baseball makes. Although baseball's tried to correct it a little bit, the NBA hasn't done anything about it, and there you have it. So, all right, and finally, thoughts on the Astros. Are you 162 game guy, or are you panic after 0-4 guy?
I believe like you do. You take it one game at a time. Mm-hmm. And it always kills me when, like, I'll tweet negative stuff about the Astros and people will kill me, I'm told. I don't look at them. About that you got to wait. They've won. They'll win. Blind support. To me, if you stink it up the way they did against the Yankees, you should be criticized. If they pitch a no-hitter and a one-hitter to beat the Blue Jays, you should be praised. If you give away a game against the Blue Jays with boneheaded base running by Altuve and Jake Meyer's boneheaded base running when he fell down, you should be criticized. But they're where they need to be, which is out of Minute Maid Park. They're going to Arlington. They're playing the Rangers in a weekend series. I hate the Rangers. And the best thing about the Astros right now is Christian Javier has been magnificent. And Framber Valdez coming off a great start. And I'm really looking forward to see if Ronel Blanco can do what Johnny Vandermeer did, only pitcher in history with back-to-back no-hitters.
Listen, I don't want Uncle Johnny's record to be broken. Blanco can go one-hit shutout. Uncle Johnny, I'm not related to him, has a record that will never be broken. So there.
That's the first thing I thought of when I met Mark, when I saw the name Vandermeer. I was like, oh, Johnny Vandermeer. Two hitters, consecutive no hitters, never been done again in the Major League Baseball since then.
I get asked this all the time, but no relation. All right, General, thanks a lot for joining us. We look forward to reading your stuff on HoustonTexans.com.
Guys, thank you very much, as always.
Coming up, more likely to happen, who's going to have more catches in the Texans wide receiver room? Let's discuss. It's Texans Radio. Let's rock on here on Texans Radio. It's Thursday, and that means in the 6:30 segment, it is time for the game that we like to call
More Likely to Happen.
All right, Johnny, here we go. I'm going to go right to it. I teased it. I'm not burying it. We're going to go right to the goods. More likely to have the most catches in the Texans receiving room. Stephon Diggs, Nico Collins, Tank Dell. Those are the only three that qualify for this conversation currently. Who's going to have the most catches in 2024?
Now, I don't want to be a prisoner of the moment, but I'm going to say Stephon Diggs.
Okay.
I think there are a couple things that work in Diggs' favor. First of all, he's done it. He's been very consistent. He's been very consistent with his availability as well. And that's a big factor. So I put those two together. I think it's going to end up being Stephon Diggs. Now, is it going to be really close? I hope so. I hope this is like 85, 81, 79 sort of thing. That would be really fun if you had those three all at that particular level. I just feel like there's going to be times where it's going to be a Diggs game. There's going to be a Tank game. There's going to be a Nico game. There's going to be one of those. But I just feel like consistently speaking, it's going to be Diggs. He's been available for 17 games for, I don't know how many, I'm not looking at his numbers right now, but he hasn't missed many games. I know that over the last 4 years.
He played 17 last year.
How many did he miss in his 4 years in Buffalo?
Nico, I got to pull that up. I have last year, it's 17. Nico played 15.
Yep.
All right. Nico had 27 fewer catches. Check this out. Diggs had 107. Nico Collins caught 80 balls. However, as Howard Cosell used to say, Nico, nearly 1,300 yards, 1,297. Stephon Diggs, 1,183. So Nico out-yarded him significantly with 27 fewer catches. Nico's yards per catch, we've gone over this many times, 16.2, top number in Texans history. Give me that. Give me high yards per catch, Nico Collins, maybe fewer receptions. Why not? And Diggs catches a bunch of balls. And by the way, Tank catches 70 for a billion yards. Let's go.
You want to hear a wild stat? What year did we go to 17 games? 21?
It was 21, yeah. David Culley.
Stephon Diggs missed one game in Buffalo.
Yeah.
One.
He's durable.
One game.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I didn't always He didn't start one game in 2020. That was it. He missed one game in 4 years.
In 2020, he and Josh Allen went off.
Oh, yeah. That was incredible. He had 166 targets, 127 receptions, 1,535 yards, 8 touchdowns.
Wow.
Holy cow. That's an incredible, incredible number. He was obviously a Pro Bowler, All-Pro.
Mm-hmm.
That's incredible. But just the durability factor. You ask me, just doing the math, I mean, if he's available for 17 games, he catches 5 passes a game. I mean, that's 5 passes a game. That doesn't seem like a whole heck of a lot. It's 85 at the end of the year.
Yeah, I think...
I'll take that.
This does not hurt Nico Collins to have Stephon Diggs here. This is going to help, all right? He'll eat targets that maybe some of the other guys would have gotten.
Right.
But to have those guys on the field at the same time with Tank, with Dalton Schultz catching passes, with Mixon out of the backfield, oh my goodness, let's go. Can't wait to see it.
Yep.
Looking forward to it.
More likely to happen.
All right, next one. More likely to bust out, have a great season, just a season from nowhere to somewhere special. The Tennessee Titans or the Minnesota Vikings. Now, with one of these teams, we know who's playing quarterback. With the other, we'll see. But what do you think? Minnie or the Titans? Both on the Texans schedule. Texans are slated to be at Minnesota. Obviously, they get the Titans twice in the division.
My instant reaction is Vikings. I was working on the Vikings actually last night. And
7 wins last year.
I was working on just looking at their lineup. Like, man, they have Jordan Addison and Justin Jefferson. They have Hockenson at tight end.
Yeah, they got a good group.
They just signed Aaron Jones, who's released by the Packers. Offensive line, Christian Darrisaw is one of the better left tackles in the league. Like, man, holy cow.
We were talking groups. This qualifies as a really good group.
So,
however,
put in one of those 4 quarterbacks that we've been talking about in the draft. Caleb Williams, Drake May, Jaden Daniels, J.J. McCarthy. Put one of those guys.
Yeah, and if you're wondering, Sam Darnold would be the starter if they were playing this weekend. Or Nick Mullins, Mall Santa.
Right. I can't even. It's the Vikings to me. Mm-hmm. Because I know what the ceiling is for Will Levis. I know the Titans are like, well, we don't know. No, look, we got Will Levis. Look at this guy. Watch him throw. Every video I see posted by Titans fans is him throwing against no defenses.
Yeah.
It's just him doing his little fancy footwork Aaron Rodgers type throws and just flicking it and whatever. That's all well and good. But I set it down on the sidelines that day. You're about to experience the Will Levis experience here. He just made an unbelievable diving to his right throw for a first down. Holy cow, how did he do that? And what did he do with the next throw? He threw it right to Steven Nelson with Treylon Burks right down the sideline wide open.
I remember that.
That is the Levis experience, and I just can't think that has a really high ceiling.
Mm.
But you put a rookie with quarterbacks coach Josh McCown. You've got a Kubiak, which I don't even know which one it is the offensive coordinator, and Kevin O'Connell that's still there with the Vikings, with a rookie quarterback. And look, Drake May played for Josh McCown in high school.
Yeah.
They have a connection, just like Gerard Johnson had a connection with C.J. Stroud. They're not going to get Caleb Williams, but I think it's one of the other three, Jaden Daniels, Drake May, and J.J. McCarthy. Those quarterbacks are going into a much better situation when you think about it, then Bryce Young went into last year in Carolina.
How awesome would it be if one of those Kubiak kids was running a completely different system? We're going to go wishbone or run and shoot.
Run the wishbone.
What
That'd
a
awesome.
Rebel. Rebelling from dad.
here's the thing.
Or he embraces the Patriot offense that nobody can run except for the greatest quarterback who ever lived, and he's now retired.
Gary
would be unhappy with that.
I haven't done the math on this, Mark, but how many teams now run some sort of version of that offense? It feels like everybody's doing it now.
Well, Johnny, why haven't more teams embraced the Patriots offense that doesn't work? I guess it's built into that question.
More likely to happen. Next question.
Let's get to the next
more
one.
More likely to happen.
More likely to be the starter that gets replaced, either by injury or ineptitude, mistakes, whatever. So who's going to lose their spot first, for whatever reason, the Titans' Will Levis or the Colts' Anthony Richardson?
Ooh, I thought you were going somewhere else with this. I was bracing for Steelers' Russell Wilson. I think it'll be Will Levis.
Okay.
Because I think with Richardson, number five overall pick, look, Bill O'Brien used to say all the time about, well, it doesn't matter where they get picked. Yes, it does. To this degree. You got a second rounder versus a first rounder. Like, there's all kinds of contractual things that go with that. You're going to give that first rounder every single opportunity. And I think I saw a tweet today. Gosh, it was a Colts. I was a Colts writer. And I was like, I almost sent it to you. And then I was like, no, I want to talk about this. And then I forgot to flag it.
Oh.
But it was essentially, Anthony Richardson is throwing inside and outside the building. And there is a lot of excitement on West 65th Street now.
Geez.
Dive into what Anthony Richardson is doing. And they wrote an article about it. And I'm like,
As I eye roll that, I have to self-report. Because in 2018, I was like that too. Okay? When Watson was actually out there throwing the balls. Watson's throwing! The same kind of thing. In fact, one day, we were up in the press box for some reason, and the team was out there working. It was pre-OTAs, but they could use the ball. It was one of those deals.
Yeah.
But before the media gets out there. And somebody's slinging the ball around, but as I look closely, it's not number four, it's number five. It was Joe Webb.
Oh, yeah.
And I got all excited, but I love Joe Webb, so I was happy for Joe that he's throwing the football. But it was just one of those deals where, not yet. I understand the Colts' excitement. However, we had more reasons to be excited at that point because the first six games with Watson were unbelievable.
You
they were from another planet.
You didn't even see a full game. And I was pretty close on the tweet I found. It's from Nate Atkins, who covers the Colts for Indy Star. He said, Anthony, I almost hit it. Anthony Richardson's thrown again inside and outside of the Colts facility and with his starting receivers. It's created a buzz at West 56th Street. And what Shane Steichen is most excited about to build on his processing skills.
Did I tell you I met him at the...
Who, Anthony Richardson?
No, I met Steichen, Shane Steichen.
Oh, yeah.
Super nice guy.
Yeah. He's an impressive... Like, I saw him at the Senior Bowl. He was standing next to Ballard, and Ballard's not a tall guy. And I looked over, I was like, man, who is that? That's a big guy. I thought at first it was Nick Sirianni for some reason. I looked over, and holy cow, he's like 6'3".
Did you talk to Ballard at the Senior Bowl?
I did for a little bit, yeah.
His hair is growing out in the back.
Yeah, a little bit.
It's not a mullet, but it's got mullet potential.
Our buddy Lance Erlein, Lance and I have known Chris for a long time, and so, of course, that's the first thing that Lance said to mess with him. And then he sees me, and he's like, oh, man. CJ Stroud, come on, man. I got to sit over here and face that guy two times a year.
Yep.
Like, yep, you certainly do,
enjoy
Chris.
Enjoy that.
Yeah, exactly.
Speaking of quarterbacks and things like that, I didn't send this to you and Andre, but somebody put a tweet up, and it was Gardner Minshew versus Trevor Lawrence. And the numbers, and I got to tell you, it's
the numbers
eye-opening.
Are pretty close.
Oh, it's
the numbers
eye-opening.
Are very,
passer
very close.
Rating, yeah, better. I know. I mean, there are a lot of things that Minshew does better, statistically anyway. So I'll just leave it at that. I know Minshew played a bunch without a bunch of wins. But,
and now that you said that, dadgummit, Trevor Lawrence is going to throw for like 350 and four tutties against us.
Well, look, he can do that from time to time. But
he's
it doesn't
got that
matter.
Club in his bag. He just can't do it all the time.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. As long as you get that division, that's
still
what
hasn't beaten us in Jacksonville.
All right, let's keep it going here.
More likely to happen.
All right. More likely to have a better career, Caitlin Clark or Caleb Williams?
Oh,
you know, I was going to go another direction with this.
I like this one, though.
I'll insert somebody else after you answer this question.
Okay. Caitlin Clark.
All right.
I think Caitlin...
Much more of a shoe, and WNBA, well, she's going to crush it, right?
Well, not only that, but she, watching her the other night in the game, the one thing I told you this that stood out was how much faster she was than anybody. Like, when she got the ball in her hands, she was like Tank Dell. So, and look, Caleb's got that as well. He's got the magician thing. I mean, he makes throws that you just shake your head at, like, what did he just do? Yeah. Now, how playing in Chicago impacts that, all that, we'll see. Whether they get him a weapon at number nine, that'll be interesting. Because they have picks number 1, 9, and then they have like two other picks the rest of the draft. It's interesting. They have like two or three picks the rest of the draft. So they're going to be interesting. But I'm going to go with Caitlin Clark. I just think she is, what she does just translates so much more to the next level. And we'll see whether the Bears can take what Caleb Williams does and translate that to the next level. Because how many teams have not been able to do that with their first round quarterbacks?
Yeah, I was going to throw in Victor Wembanyama.
Ooh, I still say Caitlin Clark.
Yeah, me too.
I'll still say Caitlin Clark. I mean, he's freaky now. I mean, dunks that thing from the free throw line standing there. If he just got a free throw and just jumped from the free throw line and laid it in before he landed, would that count as a free throw?
I think it does.
That counts, doesn't it?
I think it
does.
As
long as he doesn't hit the ground before it would leave his hand.
Before it gets through the hoop or something, yeah.
Because he could probably dunk. He could easily just dunk that.
Why didn't Wilt do that?
I don't know.
I don't know either.
No idea. Right,
let's get to the next one.
Visionary.
More likely to happen.
All right, more likely to have a better season, and this is a injury prediction one as well. Joe Burrow, who's coming back, and Aaron Rodgers, who's coming back. Now, the Texans will take on Rodgers and the Jets at the Meadowlands. They will not face Burrow this year until or unless they meet in the playoffs. Thoughts?
I look at that Jets roster, and I feel like it's good offensively. Now, the offensive line, I still think, has a couple of pieces, but you know, they've added a couple of vets on the outside, and obviously it's a big if. If Morgan Moses and Tyron Smith stay healthy, then, oh, maybe Rodgers is protected. But Joey B's been doing it behind a dog snot offensive line that just hasn't been any good, and he still creates. I mean, I still say I was standing basically at the line where Jamar Chase caught that bomb from him.
Uh-huh.
I had moved to the other side of the field, and I'm seeing Joe scramble. Ooh. And I'm seeing the ball. I'm like, what's he doing with this? How's he get that? I think Chase is going to God. It's a Mahomes-like throw, but he made it so easy. And the thing was, I got out to the field early that day. I watched him work on all those throws before the game. Like, when nobody there. It was just him and the manager. They worked on all those throws, and he was money. I think Joe Burrow coming back healthy, that's makes scary. The Bengals scary again. We'll see what they do with T. Higgins, but I think defensively that could be the problem for the Bengals. They've taken some hits on that side, and I don't know that they've replaced everybody they want to replace over there, in particular DJ Reader, so we'll see what they do. But I think Joey B coming back. Do you trust a 40-year-old coming off an Achilles tear? No. When have we ever seen that happen with success in the NFL?
Yep.
I mean, Rodgers is different, but I just have never seen it happen, so I'm not betting that he has that kind of year.
No darkness retreat this year that we know about anyway, so we'll see if that has.
Maybe he's in the dark right now.
It could be. Never know. All right, next up, how you enjoy the NFL on television or not. NFL Network, what they're going through, what are you looking forward to this fall? Let's talk about that, among other things, to close it out here on Texans All Access. All right, final walk in the park here on Texans Radio tonight. Another big show tomorrow. Among other things, a sampling of Texans OGs with Andy Kalou and Anthony Hill. And you want to hear what these guys have to say. They're both prominent Houston area businessmen as well as former NFL players, and it's good stuff. And by the way, here's a teaser for next week. Scheduled to appear on Texans OGs, Andre Johnson with Andy
Kalou.
Wow. This is the one we've been waiting for, so that's going to be good. All right, let's get to this now. NFL Network, very sad for us to see that James Palmer and Andrew Siciliano and Melissa Stark no longer with NFL Network. And is it Will Silva?
Will Silva.
Yeah, he's the
news guy. Yeah, update guy.
The news guy on Good Morning Football, and that show is being completely revamped. It's off the air right now. They're going to redo it, apparently, in L.A. We'll see. We'll see how that goes. Because the league, Johnny, the league wants to sell all of NFL media. They want to sell it off to probably ESPN. This leaves a lot of things to question.
Mm-hmm.
One of them, and look, I don't know what you do with NFL Network. It's just another channel on TV at that point. Now, they'll do something good with it, but I think the problem is NFL Network doesn't have enough live events. Yeah, it's the league, but they don't have enough games, and that's what sustains ESPN and FS1 and all those other channels. And then their ancillary program is even better because you have PTI and some of these shows that really do work. The McAfee Show does get numbers, get 300,000-400,000 a day. NFL Network has nothing that gets those kinds of numbers unless it's the combine or you're in training camp or you're rerunning preseason games that everybody wants to see or enough people want to see. So I think the NFL Network people are in big trouble here. And I love them. I love the programming. I do. And I think a lot of us who really diehard style follow this league do. But clearly, it's up for sale. There's a for sale sign on it, literally. I'm not making this up. It's been reported.
Right.
And Roger Goodell has said that.
Would you? I'm asking because I know with the NFL Plus app, you can go pick any game you want and watch a condensed version of a game, whatever. Would it make sense for the NFL Network just on a on a Monday or Tuesday. You have a bunch of press conferences Monday. You can play and react to that sound. But on Tuesday, it's just all day.
Games?
Yeah, of games. Because the game is pretty much 40 to 45 minutes. Well, if you add commercials in there, that ends up being an hour.
They don't run enough of those condensed
games. That's what I'm saying. Just run those condensed games.
Yes. They run entire games, which I think is kind of a waste of time.
It's a waste.
Because I don't want to sit through an entire game. I just did that. And even if I've not done it, I want to watch the game. I want to watch a condensed copy.
But if you're sitting there for an hour at lunch.
Yeah.
So you got an hour at lunch, you can watch the whole game.
Edit out all the stuff you don't need.
Right.
And make the game super watchable and enjoyable that way. And yes, it's a lot of editing work, but sink the investment into that, and I think they'll be a lot more successful. Also, maybe more clever shows. I don't know. Good Morning Football, I got to admit, it's always on in my office, but most often with the sound off because I'm working, you know? And every once in a while, I'll see a topic. Angry Rons, I want to watch that. That's awesome.
Yep.
Kyle Brandt.
Mm-hmm.
I might let him build the show. I don't know. I don't know what they should do. Here's the other thing. Red Zone. What do you do with Red Zone? Because that's part of NFL media. Yep. So ESPN, I'm sure they would love Red Zone, and they would sell the schnot out of it.
They would.
Once you don't have control of it anymore, league. Now, the league could have certain stipulations and everything and protect categories, whatever. But I wouldn't run commercials during Red Zone, but I'm still shocked that you don't have any banner ads.
Yeah, yeah,
very
banner
rarely
ads for
you'll
sure.
see something, but I would have that pumping through there. Red Zone, I don't know what the audience is on a Sunday afternoon. It's not a huge audience compared to what you want as a TV programmer, but whoever's watching is hooked. They're mainlining the stuff on a Sunday afternoon like I am when the Texans are not playing.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and how many people like that are there? There's always been... I've always felt like there's a lot of great content they have. I just don't know how much it costs to put it all together. But, like, you know, their top 10 shows that they had, those are great.
Those
I love those. But I don't know how much it costs to do all of that.
Yeah, they licensed some of that out. I think working with NFL Films, look, the library is huge.
Yeah.
But if you like old-time football, you're still not going to watch that all the
time.
Right. I mean, I love the old Air Coryell San Diego Chargers, but I'm not going to dig in and watch those games.
Yeah,
I agree. I'll watch a tweet, you know, a tweet-length video. There's 2 minutes of Dan Fouts throwing to Kellen Winslow. I love it. But that's it. I'm off on my day. So there is a need for a library of material, but it's not necessarily going to be a heavily viewed thing where it's a sustainable business product in 2024 in broadcasting. I just don't see it. So we'll see what happens to them. All right, tomorrow, like we said, Texans OG segment with ND and Anthony Hill. Johnny's got other stuff. We will talk about Stephon Diggs and the rest of it. You know it's still going to come up in the conversation as we get ready for another weekend with the draft 3 weeks away. Area 45 is next. Have a great night. Go Texans.